made mention in the class portion, this is my home county. Technically, I was born across the state line in Atmore, but those of you who've been to Oak Grove understand that there is no hospital in Oak Grove. People sometimes ask me about, well, you know, one traffic light. I said, look, we didn't have a four-way stop until I was in junior high school, you know, then. But it is good to be back in the area which I grew up. Some of you I knew from back then. Many of you have known my parents. But it's good to be here. I'm so glad that Janet is able to be with me. She comes every time she can. And I'm glad she's here. And I think you'll be glad that she's here. And appreciate the Hammonds being willing to graciously host us. And, you know, it's always tough when a child has to give up a room. But, you know, it's... They bribed her, I think, you know. She was awfully nice about it. No, they've been gracious hosts for the little while we've been there. Maybe it'll continue. I don't know. I'm pretty sure I feel confident in Tracy Howell. You know, that's I've not known him very long, but I'm getting to get some pictures here. And it's good to have all of you here, all of you here to worship God, to think about His Word. Appreciate those who are visiting with us. And as you can see, I want to talk about fathers. This is, as everybody knows, this is Father's Day. Father's Day is one of those, and I know many of you can relate to this, once you've lost your father, it is a little different day. You know, your children, when you have children, it's still a special day. It's a little bittersweet. But when you have, as a father, you also, if you have any vestiges of humility within you, you recognize that you've not always been the father you should have been. And so it's not easy to talk about some of these things. But I want to talk about fathers because this is the Lord's Day. And the Lord has instructions for those of us that would be fathers. And I want us to think about some things He's had to say. And I think that's important, that we think about God's role for fathers. And I want to start with a part that I think is becoming more and more neglected in our society. If you're going to be a good father, you start by being a good husband. It is important that we be married to the mother of our children. That's God's plan anyway. Hebrews 13:4, marriage is honorable among all and the bed undefiled, but fornicators and adulterers God will judge. God's plan from the beginning was that children be born to married couples. Now, I want to say this. I know there are exceptions beyond our control. Sometimes a mother dies. Well, you know, here's a godly man who's raising children up without being married to the mother of their children because the mother died. Sometimes a mother may walk away from a situation. She pays no attention to Matthew 19:6, what God's joined together, let not man separate. That's not always a husband's fault. There are times when a godly man is almost forced into the Matthew 19:9, putting away his spouse because of sexual immorality that God allows. And in Georgia, I baptized a man who tried to be a good father. He had fathered a child out of wedlock before he became a Christian. And the woman that was the mother of his child, he had, you know, when he became a Christian, marrying her was not an option. He had to be the best father he could be in a bad circumstance. I recognize exceptions. But we must not let exceptions obscure the rule. The fact that God has a plan that husbands be fathers, that fathers be husbands. And I want to make it clear, I'm talking about more than just being married. Ephesians 5, good fathers are going to be good husbands. The kind who, verse 25, love their wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her. Verse 28, so husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as the Lord does the church. Verse 33, nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his own wife as himself. If you're going to be a good father, you start by being a good husband who loves his wife, who loves her in a sacrificial way, who loves her in a way he cherishes and he nourishes and he provides for her. And I offer at least three reasons why this is really important. First and foremost, it's God's plan. As we've already noted from Hebrews 13:4, God does not look lightly on fornication and adultery. In 1 Corinthians 6, 9, and 10, you've got one of those do not be deceived passages that I mentioned in the Bible class period. Do you not know that the unrighteous will not inherit the kingdom of God? Do not be deceived. And he starts it off, neither fornicators. Then he has idolatry. Then he says adulterers. God expects us to wait until marriage. He expects us to be faithful in marriage. That's God's plan for us. I understand 30% or more of the children born in this country are born out of wedlock. And let me say, that's not the children's fault. Don't look down on the children. But let's understand, that's not what God intended. And children are simply better off in every way. Financially, emotionally, spiritually. And I want to say this, if there are single parents in this congregation, I don't mean this to put you down, to rub salt in the wounds of those who have repented of their sins. But we need to understand, absentee fathers in general cost their children financially. One of the leading causes of poverty in this country is not the inequities of capitalism. And I would acknowledge, even though I'm pretty much a free market advocate, that capitalism sometimes has some inequities in it. And there are those who are abusive. But one of the leading causes of poverty is single parenthood. God intended that there be a father and a mother there to provide. And they need to be there for guidance and love and discipline. I'll show you a couple of passages in Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 18. It's one of those, it's so easy to just run right by it and not see it. Verse 8, chapter 1, my son, hear the instruction of your father, and do not forsake the law of your mother, for they will be a graceful ornament on your head and chains about your neck. Father and mother. You've got the same thing in chapter 6, verse 20. My son, keep your father's command, and do not forsake the law of your mother. Bind them continually upon your heart, tie them around your neck. When you roam, they will lead you. When you sleep, they will keep you. When you awake, they will speak with you. Children need the guidance, the teaching, and the discipline of a united home. They need the security of a family. They need a mother and a dad both there who love one another, who get along with one another. They need to see a good marriage. I don't mean that children from broken homes, single parent homes, can't overcome it. But you think about what a blessing to grow up in a home in which children have witnessed the truth of it's not good that the man should be alone. Genesis 2:18. They've witnessed he who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. Proverbs 18:22. They've seen Ephesians 5 in practice. You don't think they have a little healthier view of marriage just from having seen this? boys. Boys need to grow into men, understanding both what the Word of God teaches and having witnessed an example of this lived out before them. Girls, our young ladies, they are being asked by God, commanded of God, if you want to put it that way. And I believe it can be said either way. They're being asked to take on a role in marriage that our world just dismisses and puts down and mocks and ridicules, the role of being the submissive helper. That's so old-fashioned. Let's get rid... No, it's God's Word. See what? They will be more willing to joyfully accept that role when they've grown up in a home with a father who was a husband that loved his wife, who didn't denigrate his helper, who didn't use his place of headship as some tyrannical, despotic throne, you know, which he'd do whatever he wanted to do. No, he loved and he nourished and he cherished. She'll have a better outlook on marriage. So many marriages end in divorce. It's good for children to grow up in homes where they've seen parents who they went through some hard times and never gave up. Have your children after you marry. Remain married. Love your wife. Love the mother of your children. And then another one I wanted to make mention of is we start thinking about, don't be defined by your job. Now, I want it understood, we have to be a worker. You can't be a good father if you're not a worker. 1 Timothy 5:8, if anyone does not provide for his own and especially those of his own household, he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. You know what 2 Thessalonians 3:10 says? If a man won't work, neither should he eat. Ephesians 4:28, let him who stole steal no longer, but rather let him labor, working with his hands what is good. God expects all disciples to be willing to work. You're not ready to even think about getting married if you're not committed to working, willing to work, willing to work hard. But at the same time, we as fathers and as husbands, we need to avoid the trap, and it's one easy to fall into, of being defined by our jobs. You know, I heard this recently from some person, may have been a professional athlete, who said, people ask me, you know, what do you do? He said, my response is not, I think he was a basketball player. He said, I'm not a basketball player. He said, I do that. I play basketball. I'm not a basketball player. I'm a father. I'm a husband. I'm a Christian, I think he said. You know, and I don't know that much about, since I can't even remember who said it, you know, obviously. But I think about that. Yeah, I'm a preacher. You're an engineer. You're a factory worker. Yeah, we have these jobs, and it's fine to say I am that in that sense. It's what you do. But if that really becomes who you are, it may have taken too great a place in your life. First things first. I mean, first and foremost, I'm supposed to be seeking first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, Matthew 6:33. If work is the number one thing in my life, then I've got my priorities out of whack. I'm like Martha there in Luke the 10th chapter. Who she could have been like Mary, sitting at the feet of Jesus. Jesus said, Martha, Martha, you're worried and troubled about many things. She was not given over to immorality, unbelief. She was distracted. Distracted with much serving. Sometimes in our lives as fathers, it's really easy. It's really easy to be distracted by too much working. Too much of that. Why? I've got these last two passages up here flipped in the order I think I'd like to take them. Because I used to think that 1 Timothy 6:9-11 explained a lot of why some men were workaholics. Why they were not home as much as they needed to be. The love of money. The root of all kinds of evil. And that is an issue with a lot of fathers. Sometimes it's an issue back home with mom, who's pushing dad to make more, to work longer hours, to take more of those trips so he can earn more bonuses. And sometimes it's not just dad. The love of money, the failure, as he would say in 1 Timothy 6:11, to be content. That is a real issue. But it seems what I've witnessed more and more in recent years is pride. 1 Peter 5, in verse 5, he says, "Likewise, you younger people, submit yourselves to your elders. Yes, all of you be submissive to one another and be clothed with humility. For God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble." I think I see men who are putting in extra. Oh, there may be some financial rewards to it, but they want that next title. They want that next position. They want to be thought of a little higher, a little more. They want those honors. I could go on home Thursday evening, but if I make one more sales call, I'll be top salesman this month. My name will be on the plaque. You know, the special parking spot, that'll be mine. Oh, there's already enough to feed the kids. The job is secure. But if I make one more, maybe two more, you know, because the first one may turn me down. It's that pride. We need to be careful of that. We need to keep working its place. One of the things we do sometimes is we overburden our wives. We put too much on them. And I think in any marriage, you know, there are going to be those times when it may be necessary. Sometimes she may have to put a little extra on you. You have to put, we understand give and take, but that can't be happening all the time. Fathers, you have to have time to teach and to discipline. I want to say more about that teaching in a moment, but look at Deuteronomy 6. Think about what's implied in these words. He's just given them the great commandment to love the Lord. And he says in verse 6, "These words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up." This dad, it was expected he was going to be with the children, right? You'll talk about it when you're sitting in the house, when you're walking by the way, when you're lying down, when you're rising up. Those are things that take time. There was a time in which, you know, you hear about take your child to work day. Few of you can remember when every day was take your child to work day. You know, you were heading out to a cotton field, and you were dragging the kids out of bed, and they were going to work with you. You had cows to milk. The kids were going to work with you. We long since moved past that agrarian society where most people farm, the farmers. It's not the same as it was. You don't take your child to work every day. You're going to be away from home a certain amount. It's a necessary part of our lives. But you're going to have to make adjustments. Sometimes it may mean that you have to give up a little bit of your time. Doesn't mean you can't have hobbies. But sometimes you may have to sacrifice those. And let me encourage you. And this is something I think those of us who preach can struggle with. When you're at home, try to be at home. You know, in preaching, you know, you may think it's not bad. I mean, we only work about a day and a half a week, as you know, most people know. And, you know, you start thinking about, you've got to come up with, some of the men, I know, have done this. You've been called to fill in. Preacher's going to be gone. You had a Wednesday night talk. And you said,
It took me 3 weeks to figure out what I was going to talk about. Okay, you do this twice a week, every week, for several years. So you're always trying to think about, what am I going to talk about next? And you're watching a TV show, and you're thinking, well, that'd work, that'd be great. I can use that in a sermon.
We need to be with our families. When we're at home, let's try to be at home, all of us. And I want to encourage you, teach your children. Ephesians 6:4, well-known verse. And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. There's so much we want for our children. We want our children to do well academically. To win these awards in school. Maybe they're in arts. We want them to succeed there. If they're in athletics, we want them to do well. But there is nothing more important than their spiritual success. When Jesus said, for what is a man profited if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? What will a man give in exchange for his soul? You replace that with your child's soul. What profit is it to a man if he gets all the promotions, but the soul of his child is lost? What would you give in exchange for your child's soul? Don't make that mistake. One of the things you do is you start. If you're not married, you realize the wife is going to be an essential part of this. Choose wisely. Choose one who will be a help, but it's not all her responsibility. And if you want to teach your children well, the thing to do is start with an example. Let them see you as that light. Remember what Jesus said? Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. Your children ought to be ones who see that light shining. 1 Corinthians 11:1, Paul would say, imitate me as I also imitate Christ. Your children need to see that good example in you. In Colossians, the 3rd chapter, verse 21, fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged. I'm pretty sure he doesn't mean, fathers, don't ever make your children angry by telling them they have to clean their rooms. Because every parent would have violated that at some point, I'm sure. How do you provoke your children and discourage them? One of the easiest ways to do that is to expect of them things that you're not willing to do. To ask of them to live a life that you're not willing to do. You talk to them about the importance of the Lord, about attendance, about Bible study, about morality. And you don't live those things. If you want your children to grow up either not Christians, are half-hearted, lukewarm, then be that yourself. And you can succeed in that. Be a good example. And then you've got to teach the Word. It starts with example, but it can't end there. Faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the Word of God. Psalm 119, verse 9, how does a young man cleanse his way? By taking heed according to your word. They've got to hear the word. You've got to implant the word in them. Teach your children. And I want to encourage you, fathers, take advantage of the Bible classes of the local church. Several things. One, they're going to learn the word of God. Bible classes are where they first begin to appreciate something about God's plan for his people, that they come together and build one another up. Have your children present. Have them prepared. May I offer to you, every now and then, check with a teacher and ask how they're doing. You know, if you're like, a friend of mine one time said that, asked a teacher, said, how is, I think it's
I think it was his son Jesse. I have a son Jesse, but I'm pretty sure it was his son Jesse. He said, "How's Jesse doing in class?" The teacher said, "Well, he needs to work on his inside voice a little bit." And he knew what that meant. And I'll tell you, shock. This will be shocking to some of you who've taught Bible classes. Jimmy didn't get mad at the teacher and say, "Well, maybe if you were a better teacher, you know." No, Jimmy and Jesse worked on inside voice. You know, they had a little He wanted him to learn. He wanted him to be the person he ought to be. Encourage your children to listen. There's a point, you know, when you first start bringing them. All you want out of your child in the assembly is to be quiet and let you listen. There is a time in which if they will take a nap during this, it is a blessing to you, to the preacher, to everybody around them. But sometimes fathers and mothers, our children are getting old enough to begin to learn more, to get more out of it, and we do everything we can to keep them from that. We're still giving them coloring books and picture books and encourage listening. But beyond this, you're going to have to teach at home. How much time do you have in Bible class each week? 90 minutes total. The schools, you know, they keep your kids for, 35 hours a week? And then give them homework sometimes? We got 90 minutes. And of course, if you prepare your lesson, you spend a little more time. And sometimes said, the church is losing its young people. I want you to hear this carefully, folks. Churches don't have young people. Parents have young people. Parents, you've got to teach. You've got to spend time at home teaching. When you're riding in the car, Judges 2 in verse 10 said, a generation arose that knew not God. Don't let that happen with your children. A few weeks ago, I'm glad Janet mentioned this last night because I would have forgotten it probably. But we went to a pre-school graduation. You know, those are interesting affairs for those who've been there, for one of our grandsons. And they had a little slideshow at the end where all the children were asked what they wanted to be when they grew up. And one little boy, very loudly, he said, "You know, what do you want to be when you grow up?" "A man." I like that. In our society, especially, and all the gender confusion, I liked it. But I want you to think about husbands, fathers, be a man. 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 13 says, watch, stand fast in the faith, be brave, be strong. The phrase "be brave," New King James, is literally act like a man. Some of the older translations says, quit ye like men. Be a man, he's saying. Now, we need brave and courageous women too. But I want you to go back to Joshua chapter 1. Joshua is one of the great characters of the Bible. But notice how many times he was told to be strong and of good courage. Verse 5. No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and of good courage. For to this people you shall divide as an inheritance the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous, that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may prosper wherever you go. This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate in it day and night, that you may observe to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have good success. Have I not commanded you, be strong and of good courage? Do not be afraid, nor be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you
wherever you go. Do you see a point of emphasis here? Verse 6, be strong and of good courage. Verse 7, be strong and very courageous. Verse 9, be strong and of good courage. We need men.
Men who can go through times of suffering, adversity, hardship, whether it be in our nation, in a home, in a church, and they persevere. They don't sound retreat.
We need men like a Joseph. Joseph faced so much adversity, and yet he was strong. Strong enough to resist temptation. Strong enough not to give in to bitterness and vengeance. Men like Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I would estimate that Daniel and his friends were probably in their mid-teens when they were taken to Babylon. That'd be the best guess. Young men who were strong. In Daniel 6, when he's thrown into the lion's den, Daniel was most likely in his 80s. And he was a strong old man. He was strong and courageous at every stage of his life. That's what God's looking for. We need leaders in the home. It's not easy sometimes to say no to our children. We love our children. Sometimes my children didn't believe this, but I really did want them to be happy. I hated saying no to them. But sometimes we have to say no. They want to dress ways that just aren't right. We have to say no. They want to go to some events at school, some dances. No. Sometimes they have places they really want to go. Their friends want them to go somewhere. It happens to be gospel meeting night. No. That's not easy. That takes strong and of good courage. Most men would rather go out here and fight a wild animal than to deal with a teenage girl's tears. And sometimes, and it shouldn't be this way, but sometimes mother's tears will join in too. You got to be strong. You got to listen. And you think, on Father's Day, and talking about godly fathers, you're going to talk about church discipline? Yeah. In most churches, when there comes a time when you've got to follow the instructions of 1 Corinthians 5, or 2 Thessalonians 3, or some other passages, there will be voices of opposition. It takes courage to, in a loving and a kind way, to say, no, we're going to do what God says. And here's why I'm tying this to fathers. One, you're setting a good example for your children. But look at 1 Corinthians 5 in verse 6, when he gives one of the reasons for the discipline of this member. This was the man that had taken his father's wife. He said, your glorying is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? Fathers, do you want your children growing up in a spiritual environment in which sin is tolerated? It's accepted? You just kind of acquiesce. You go along to get along. Because, well, somebody was opposed to it. And so what happens? The influence of sin grows. And it spreads. And it will affect your children. That's why also I mentioned, it's unpopular today. I mean, after all, you know, we see the bumper sticker, coexist. I mean, we're supposed to coexist with people of every belief and unbelief. So certainly, you know, we're not going to be worried about somebody who's off a little bit on the gospel. Do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits whether they are of God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world. Beloved, while I was very diligent to write to you concerning our common salvation, I found it necessary to write to you exhorting you to contend earnestly for the faith which was once for all delivered to the saints. And he gives a reason for certain men have crept in unnoticed. He said, ungodly men will turn the grace of God into lewdness. There are churches today, churches of Christ, that are adding instrumental music. They're accepting women preachers. And a lot of people shaking their heads going, how in the world did they get there? Well, I will tell you, they didn't get there overnight. It didn't just happen yesterday. There were moments along the way where people could have stood up and they could have said no more. They could have said back to the Bible. But I don't know that anybody did. I want you to turn to 2 Samuel 23, rather. I'm sorry. 2 Samuel 23. I just love this story. It's a story about a very different kind of battle. But I want you to make a spiritual application of this. It's talking about David's mighty men. And it says in verse 9, after him was Eleazar, the son of Dodo, the Ahoite, one of the three mighty men with David when they defied the Philistines who were gathered there for battle. And the men of Israel had retreated. Now, pay it. Men are going one way. Here comes Eleazar. He arose and attacked the Philistines until his hand was weary and his hand stuck to the sword. The Lord brought about a great victory that day, and the people returned after him only to plunder. And after him was Shammah, the son of Agi, the Hararite. The Philistines had gathered together into a troop where there was a piece of ground full of lentils. So the people fled from the Philistines, but he stationed himself in the middle of the field, defended it, and killed the Philistines. So the Lord brought about a great victory. I know a lot of you don't know me well. I'm not about, let's go on the attack all the time. Let's be suspicious of everybody. Somebody says something just a little differently than the way I would say it, well, then I'm going to attack. No. Love bears all things, believes all things, endures all things, hopes all things. We want to speak the truth with kindness. But I will tell you, there is a time to take up the spiritual sword and hold that sword until your hand is cramped up and won't go anymore. There is a time to take your stand in the middle of the field. Somebody put it one time, tear up the pea patch. It's time. There are forces of darkness out there. And it won't get any better if we ignore them. Fathers, your children need to see this kind of example. One day your children will find themselves in a church that has gone into full-blown apostasy if some fathers aren't willing to stand up and say no more. Back to the Bible. 1 Samuel 17. A young man proved himself to be a man that day. David went out to battle against Goliath. But do you remember what his brother did when he began to ask about this? Verse 28, now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men. And Eliab's anger was aroused against David. And he said, why did you come down here? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your pride and the insolence of your heart, for you have come down to see the battle. Now, Eliab for 40 days has been letting this go on. He hasn't thought about, well, you know, I'll take the man on. So when David finally speaks up, oh, you're full of pride, that's why you do it. David said, what have I done now? And I love his next part. Is there not a cause? When truth is compromised, when error is taught, there will be those who will talk about pride and insolence of heart. Is there not a cause? When truth needs to be defended, defend it. Speak the truth in love. And make sure that it is not ever pride and insolence of heart. Sometimes that does motivate people. Some people are not contending for the faith. They're just being contentious. And I don't want that. I don't want to be that. I don't want you to be that. But I do want you to be a man. And ladies, you be brave too.
Fathers, it's the day you're supposed to get a gift. And I hope you get nice gifts if you're a father. But most importantly, I hope you'll be the kind of man that God is going to honor. Those are good husbands who work, but keep their work in perspective. Those are the kind of men who teach their children. They are men of courage. I hope you fathers will be benefited by this.
As painful as it is, mothers sometimes have to remind us of these things. But as we close this morning, I want to ask you this. Are you a faithful child of God? Are you the person you ought to be? Have you become a child of the Father in heaven?
You do that when by faith you're baptized into Christ. You become His child. If you've never done that, we're going to exhort you to this morning to do that. We're going to sing 280, "I Have Decided to Follow Jesus." I hope you have decided that. And if you have, you come while we stand and sing together.